Let us pray. Name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, one God, Amen. Lord, make us ready to pray with all thanksgiving. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those trespass against us. Lead us not temptation, but those from evil one. Christ Jesus our Lord, thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory forever and ever. Amen. Okie dokie. I just have a religious background, but I really like this very Canadian winter version of things. Okay, there's a bunch of like a lot of people submit online, which is pretty cool. But you can also put stuff in here if you want as well. As Marina said, if you look for the funky shape things, I'm still learning how to use this thing as well. And apparently you can also upvote and stuff just like Slido, which is cool. Hey George, I didn't get to get Noah's approval for my background, but that's okay. All right, let me open the two sides. So I'm so rusty, like this feels so unnatural. I haven't done this in so long. So let us choose I'll choose some things at random. And then feel free to jump in, guys. Like you can unmute, you can comment, you can interject and stuff like that. Like it's not awkward. There's so many that are God's will related, but let me see if there's some that aren't there. Okay, I'll go with the first one. I live with my parents and they tend to verbally fight each other. I see my mother's point of view and my father's obviously still holding on to some pain. He has clearly not forgiven my mother over. I don't see eye to eye with either of them. How involved should I be in this matter? I have two younger sisters. I do not want hurt by this interaction. I'm 23 for context. I am called to be peacemaker and honor my parents. But should I rebuke their actions actively or flee from conflicts and let them continue their fighting? I also feel like I do not want to take on a burden, but I cannot remain on a burden I cannot maintain of being the middleman. Honestly, their communication skills and lack of seeing the bigger picture feels like they're operating at a kindergarten level. Forgive me for this rebuke. In short, I think like if there was going to be a one-liner answer, I would say like you need to remember that you're the child, not the parent. Because I think that really often there's role confusion. And sometimes it's inappropriate. Usually it's inappropriate. Parents need to remember that their kids are their kids, and kids need to remember that they are the kids and not the parents. And so when we start taking on roles of trying to counsel or mediate or be middleman, I think it's extremely unhealthy, in the sense of like, it isn't the job of the child to reconcile the parents, because then the kid doesn't even get to be the kid anymore. So I think parents have to be very, like some of you are parents here. You've got to be careful that you don't use your kids to vent, and that you don't try and bring them in, because you're going to put them in really difficult situations, especially if there seems to be an expectation of taking sides, right? Like when it's like, ah, shufi abuki. Right? Or like shuf ummak amalat eh, and then it's like, and then if you defend, you're in trouble. If you agree, you're in trouble with the other, and you'll get dragged in for no good reason. So if there's ways to keep the peace without having to be involved, okay, cool. If you have that ability, like if there's a way to be able to say, could we just have peace? I'm making up words. I'm not saying that those are the words. Cool. But if it means getting involved, that is not the role of a child. And so like I think we just have to be very careful of that. So I don't think if you as a sibling can help protect your siblings from unnecessary exposure in some way, cool. Like, because then you can act in that sibling role. Like, I don't know what your household looks like, but if it was like, okay, guys, let's go watch a movie, let's go out, let's go for a walk, let's do this, like to change the environment for one another. It's not pretending that nothing's happening, but just to pull out of it, okay, cool. Making sure your siblings don't get unnecessarily or improperly involved also isn't a bad idea. But if you have a way that you can make the environment positive without getting involved, then that you can do as a kid, right? So like, you don't have to intervene, but if there's a way, if you're the one who's fun or funny, or you're the one who knows how to get, like some people just have the gift of helping people snap out of things. There are some people when they're around, they're just the life of the party, and they know how to like, if you will. So if you have that gift, use it. I'm just saying the active intentional involvement in the conflict is what I'm saying no. But if there are other indirect ways of helping without being a participant, that would be really good. But I'd also say careful not to, I'm glad you already said that you don't see eye to eye on either, but if you start hearing facts, you're already participating as jury, right? So it's best not to. If you can say something polite or just being like, mom or dad, you know, or when I hear these things, I judge. I don't want to be caught in the middle because I love you both. Like, find your one-liners that help you exit, because otherwise it can escalate. And family disagreements are very common. And that's what I'm just like, is if you get caught up in it can be never ending. I've seen it escalate to places where one person is so taken by one side that they're encouraging one parent to get divorced or to kick the other person out. Like, these things can escalate. So I don't mean to give an undue amount of time, but I'm just saying, just run. If there's a mediator, if somebody whose role it is to mediate, great. If there's a priest that they both respect, awesome. Sometimes there's a common adult that they both respect. It doesn't have to be a priest. Sometimes there's the uncle or tante that both of them respect. That can maybe be the role of one of those people, where that can be the role as friend, the role as mentor, the role as priest. They'd be doing something that's not necessarily wrong if they were to get involved in that. Not sure if that answers that. Guys, feel free to jump in. And anyone else wants to run their camera, all means. Well, I just want to switch between the scenarios and the questions. Okay, here's one. I'm just using at random. How can I learn how to control the tongue? And there might be a talk just on the sins of the tongue. So I'm not always good with controlling my tongue. So maybe one of the do as I say, not as I preach things. Unnecessary speech, which God says every idle word will be held accountable, right? So one is to start paying attention, just being attentive. The fact that the question is asked is good. Why am I speaking? Always ask that question. Why am I talking? And we'll get to it because not everybody thinks of it in the spot. But if you can bring the sensitivity to what is the purpose of my speech, it will already do wonders for people. Because like, if I'm, am I speaking because I want to vent? Am I speaking because I actually want to make it very clear how wrong I think somebody is? Am I speaking because I want to gossip? Am I speaking because I'm just so angry? Am I speaking because I think it's fun? Am I speaking in reaction? The knowing why I'm speaking helps you assess of what's about to come out of your mouth, if it's a good idea. So like, that's a starting point. Most we're not thinking yet beforehand, but that's the goal, is to get there. I think if we start having that exercise of self-evaluation daily, it can increase our sensitivity. I want to say daily, I actually want to say as soon as after your first conversation, if you can do it. But I'm saying as we practice towards things being in the moment rather than later, of being like, wait, why did I talk about that? And then this is the part where I think there's active little small exercises that I think can help a person stop that might be uncomfortable. When St. James says confess your sins one to another, I don't think he just means priests, like confessing to priests. Is to be able to say out loud, like, hey, my speech right now, that was inappropriate. Or if I remembered later, I do this even as a priest, where sometimes I'll shoot a message to whoever I was with of saying, I feel badly about the way that I was speaking today. I feel like I was gossiping. I feel like I spoke inappropriately. I feel like I was speaking unnecessarily. Because drawing attention to it is what helps a person stop. I used to use the word retarded all the time. I didn't think there's anything wrong with it. I didn't think this exercise can work. And then I was giving a talk and I said that somebody's retarded and in a ha-ha way. And then somebody attending the talk was like, hey, when I like, that hurt. I have a brother who's retarded. So I wasn't aware that like that's inappropriate, that is very personal, regardless of whether I'm right, dumb, whatever it is, I was wrong, right? But I'm like, man, but I use this word all the time. And so that's what I practice doing, is that like, I drew attention to it. So I start being like, hey, I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Or and I tell the group, I'm like, even if they don't think it's a big deal, like they'd be like, what's the big deal? It's just a word of being like, that's nice. I'm trying not to say it. I'm not asking you anything. I'm wanting to stop. So if I do it, call me out. Like I would start saying things like that. I'm like, just call me out. Like, and so that attention to it makes it awkward to keep doing it. And then when you've told the group, I don't want to, often they're willing to help you even if they don't agree. Like, I don't think they're always like, oh, that's so dumb. I think a lot of the times people are willing to be like, it can even be funny, right? I'm like, haha, you did it, you said it. And so that that can develop more naturally. Because then I think when you start doing that, you start to become more aware in the moment by the exposure. Like, I think that's what leads to that awareness. Is to start being like, wait, why am I doing that? Like when I apologize to the person I was talking to, being like, that was gossip what I just did, right? The person was like, I didn't think it was. And I'm just like, that's fine. I know it was. Like, that's very sweet of you, but it was. I was gossiping. And so I'm like, and I gave completely unnecessary details. But it did multiple things. It told that person, that's not what me and you are going to be about. That's not going to be how we communicate. It's not going to be like, let's vent and talk about everyone that's right or wrong. And at the same time, it made me more sensitive the minute a topic's coming up of being like, wait, why am I saying this? But it now became in the moment, not after. I know I overtell this story, but it's appropriate here. Is the focusing on the positive. And by that, what I mean is when your speech is usually very good. Sorry, I'm finding the exact, I told people to memorize the verse. And I always lose half of it as I go. What sort of things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely? Things are a good report. If there be any virtue, if there be any praise, he says, think on these things, St. Paul. I usually add, and talk on these things. And so the story that I overtells of Bruno Carlos Ibrahim and Cali, like where I'd always have to say something negative about whatever it is, right? So like if he brought up somebody like, oh, that guy, isn't he the one who, and then insert some sarcastic negative thing. And I remember one time doing that with him and just being like, oh, isn't that the priest who, and insert some sarcastic thing. And Abuna looked so confused that I even said that, first and foremost. And then secondly, it made me feel really dumb for doing. He was like, and he was gonna sound great with the guy. He was like, yeah, well, that's the priest who is the reason why I'm actually even in the church. And I'm like, man, I feel badly. But it also made me realize why did I want to? Like, it was such a better conversation to hear such a moving story than it was to be like, ha ha ha, he's like obsessed with the end of the world, and roll my eyes at something irrelevant. There's a question here that I think is related. The line between venting, ranting, gossiping, and judging, which I think is a good one. I think if we were perfect, we might not need to vent. Most of us need to. I'm just saying that we should want to reach a place where we don't need to vent. Because if we were perfect in the gospel, I'd always be completely fine. But I'm not. Right? Most of us are not. So one is going to be like, is that really what I'm doing? And if so, do I need to use names? Am I speaking to the right person? Am I speaking really for relief? Or am I speaking more because I actually want to cuss out the person that I'm mad at? Right? Or like, is it like, what is my real goal? Is it to just be like, that guy, he does this and this and this and this, and I want to look good and cause someone else to look bad? Like, it does take some introspection. The person that I'm venting to, how does it affect them? Right? And how does it affect the atmosphere of that person and me, of what space we share? Right? Because, like, let's say, like, okay, I'm a monk in a monastery. If I'm going to go to a monk brother to constantly vent about another monk brother, well, those monks are going to interact, right? So my so-called venting, that might be a really bad place for it, because what if that person had no bad feelings towards my brother, but then they start having conflict? Like, yeah, you know what? You're totally like that. That's why even Abuna AP says about you, blah, blah, blah. He might even not say that out loud, but that might be going what's on his head. And suddenly I've increased sin. So if I'm going to do it, it depends on with whom. I used to, being Abuna Carlos, when I was in Cali, I would sometimes, because he's older, because he's wiser, he's saintly, and he's all the good things. I would sometimes, if I really, really felt that way, I would sometimes, and again, it's imperfection, I'd be like, Abuna, I'm going to just verbal diarrhea bomb for like all of 90 seconds. You do not need to reply at all. I just want to let it out. And I'm like, and then I'm fine. Let's just play games. Or let's just chill. Let's do whatever it is. So like, I could do that. And by even stating that that's all it was, there was no follow-up question. There was not like, oh my gosh, really? And the details, etc. So if you need to question if it's really venting or if it's actually gossiping or judging, do I need to say names? Who am I saying it to? What is the context? Am I causing someone to think differently of another person? All of those things can be very dangerous to another person. Like, then we're murdering. Gossiping is just such a, I really don't think we take gossiping as seriously as we ought to. Like, gossiping is murder. I know that sounds so extra, but it is. Because if the symbol of a person is their name, when you bring a person's name, you're calling them to be present. And then the minute that they're present, all you're doing is throwing darts at their faces. It's violent. And you've made people resist them internally. It's very, very dangerous. Any follow-ups to that? Like, I feel weird again talking to myself. I think I got used to having a public group that we're speaking with, that now I feel weird talking to a screen. But okay. How can I love people and have dignity at the same time? It never seems to work hand in hand. I don't know if I totally understand the question. So I'll answer with how I do understand it. And if you're the person who wrote it, feel free to do an anonymous thing to clarify. Actually, wait, before I go to that one, it looks like there's a follow-up question on the gossiping one. So before switching topics, let's go back to that one. Is it gossiping if you talk to your father in confession about other priests or clergy that you are frustrated with? It could be. That's like the same questions that we're asking about with in what we're talking about. I think that that's an equally valid question with when it's in there. I'll give you an example. Amba Sarabian, he is a boss. He's told us, for example, if one of you needs to come to talk to me to complain because of something that another priest has done or said, he was like, feel free, but know that I'm going to ask you to go bring him and say it in front of him. And if you're not going to do that, then I want you to know that I will phone him and tell him what was said and who said it. So that there's no space for gossiping and all that, because theoretically, if I'm coming to him, it's theoretically because I'm actually looking to resolve the issue, right? And he goes, but if what you're trying to ask is advice, then ask advice, and you don't need to say names. You don't need to tell me who it was unless you're trying to tell me who it was. And that in general just made the whole, makes us in general being very cautious of the why am I speaking. Like, it's made me, whenever I approach Emma Severin about anything, where I will state out loud the reason for my bringing something up. Like, where I'll be like, this is not a complaint. I'm using a name for this reason. I do not have an issue with the priest. I'm asking how to navigate a very specific scenario. And it keeps this, the conversation so objective, because I'll only say the priest's name if it actually matters. It's like, if he's in charge of that, it's going to be obvious who he is, right? But it's no longer like hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I think that priest is bad at their job. It's like, no, no, no. I just want to know what I'm supposed to say in such and such situation. And that's it. And keeps it objective. So, no, it can be gossip with your father confession. It could be bad mouthing. It could be storytelling. And priests are prone to the same sins as absolutely everybody else. We could hear something and start judging someone else ourselves. Ideally, we would hear and never judge, but we could. And it could also be unfair, because here we are talking about a situation without knowing the other side of the situation. So again, if you're going to even tell your priest, it should be, I'm asking for advice how to navigate this through my lens of what I'm seeing. Right? Because then it can just be, okay, no problem, because you could be completely misinterpreting, as could I, from what you're saying, here's how I think could be wise, as opposed to like, I can't believe that, right? Because even sometimes I'll hear something and I'll be like, that's objectively wrong. Like, I'll hear that and be like, if that is the case, that has a separate system. But it's like, but you're not here for us to fix the priest. Right, we're here for you to ask what to do. So just again, always challenge, why am I speaking? And then if you can slow down speaking, even better, right? Like, if it can start turning into like, let me not be the first to respond. Let me not speak until I formulated an answer, right? This is where those Desert Father exercises can come in handy, of the rock in the mouth thing. Actually, in the monastery, there's always the joke when a monk cusses at another monk, they'll laugh and be like, he took out the stone, of like, he let loose. Can be helpful. Any follow-ups on the gossiping, venting lines stuff? Okay. Awkward. Okay, we were looking at the loving people and have dignity at the same time. I'm not sure what that means. If what it means is like, quote unquote, doing the right thing and not being a pushover or being walked over or that kind of mentality, I think that comes up a lot. Yeah, if you're going to fight for your dignity, you're not going to know how to love people. Like at the end of the day, God never called us to fight for ourselves or to defend ourselves. God called us to the opposite. So if I'm choosing not to fight back, if I'm choosing to love my neighbor, I'm doing it for the sake of truth. I'm not doing it for the sake of my dignity. So I'm not going to have that conflict if the why of my behavior is clear, right? Because it's like, whatever, it wasn't about my dignity. God can deal with my whole dignity issue. But I think what's nice about it is, again, and I know this because this question comes up a lot, is just I'm not a pushover when I'm the one who chose, right? That makes me not a pushover by very definition, right? We had a priest that we saw a lot growing up. He was in our community, Bona Silas. There's this story that he told that I think it's epic. But he's a convert from Islam, and there was someone who tried to kill him at Waterloo campus in Canada. And so like the guy went to jump Abuna, and Abuna busted out whatever strength kung fu fighting gifts he's got. Basically took the guy down to the ground, and he had his knee over the guy's Adam's apple. And told him, like, hey, you know, like, I could kill you. He's like, I can. It's not that I can't. It's not that I have no power. I'm choosing not to because I'm a Christian. So he's like, so I'm going to remove my knee from your Adam's apple. And if you want, you can kill me. Go ahead. If not, we can go to Tim Hortons and have a coffee. And clearly, the guy chose coffee because Abuna lived to tell the story. But it's that. Right? It's like what Christ said, no one takes my life from me. I lay it down myself. Right? So it's your dignity as the son or daughter of the king is not diminished by your choosing to care for somebody or for choosing not to fight back. So there really is no, conflict. Really like between the two, just something to think about. I feel so sorry for the three cameras that are on because I'm just staring at you three constantly. Like, all right. Where did it go? Hey Siri, do clergy run churches to benefit themselves? I'm not Siri, but I don't know if the question is a question or a statement, or trying to make a point, but I'll treat it as a question. Of Alexa, do clergy run churches benefit themselves? Maybe. If they do, then they're wrong. So it's that simple. I mean, everyone, including clergy, is capable of wrong. Everybody, including clergy, are capable of abusing power. Everybody, including clergy, are capable of every single wrong possible. So is it possible that our clergy who are benefiting themselves, and I'm assuming when you write benefiting themselves, I'm assuming you mean maliciously and not spiritually. And if malicious, then yeah, it's possible. Theoretically, there are also checks and balances. Theoretically, there are also boards to look into these kind of things. Theoretically, there's a bishop to take a look at these things. Theoretically, every member of the church has a voice that they're allowed to use. I'm saying theoretically because I'm sure that things can go wrong. What I'm just saying is that could it happen? It could. But that's true of everyone, including you, whoever wrote the question. You could be abusing your power and positions in different ways as well for your own benefit. So we all should be circumspect about whether or not we're taking advantage of anybody and repent of it, including clergy, if and when we do it. But if it was meant spiritually, as in to benefit themselves spiritually, then I hope so. But no idea if there's a context for that. I don't know if I'm going the relationship direction yet. There's some questions about dating slash marriage. So, okay, this is a scenario. It says about a spiritual guide. I appreciate the talks about the difference between guidance and confession. I'm just summarizing because there's a lot. We've been moving around since I was 12. I'm now in my end of my 20s. I'd confess wherever I was, but I finally settled in a place when I was 17 and have been confessing with the priest at the church since then, and he's my father confession. So now I've always gone for confession, but would restrict my seeking guidance because of various reasons. But the main reason that the church is riddled with politics and drama, and at the root of it is Abuna. I don't mean this in a condemning or judgmental way. I mean to say that he, by his own admittance, doesn't have a strong leadership personality and is more of a simple man of prayer. Other times, attempts to solve problems lead to more drama and issues. On top of this, it's a smaller church, so everything is under a magnifying glass. He's got a lot of family problems, and a particular member of the family has caused a lot of problems. I honestly am saying all of this not to hate on the priest or to speak ill. Honestly, I promise. I'm trying to give an accurate scenario. He's got a lot of issues, but he also has a lot of amazing qualities. He's a man of prayer and truly takes it to God in liturgy. He has much wisdom, etc. He's been a priest for a very, very long time. In the past, I was reluctant to seek guidance from this priest because I couldn't separate him from the politics that I blamed him for. But in recent years, I've taken my spiritual life and growth more seriously. You spoke about obedience in the context of discipleship, and I believe that and tried to live in that light. So much so that Abuna has given me instructions on certain things that I've argued with him, but said, I don't agree, but I will do it out of obedience and for the blessings. I honestly am seeking through discipleship and submitting, trusting God will lead me according to the words, hands of my spiritual father. But in recent months, years, I feel that what Abuna is telling me is not what he does. And I fully accept that I could be wrong in just being judgmental. For example, he might tell me to do something or stay away from something, but then I'll see that family member doing the same thing, or I'll see him not living the same things that he told me. I know he's human, that his weaknesses and faults like me. And it's become more of a do as I say, not as I do approach. I could be misjudging and seeing things wrong. Should I be searching for another spiritual guide? It would have to be virtual because the only one in the area. Or should I continue to approach him with that same spirit of seeking true discipleship and praying, asking for God through him, and trust as the Holy Spirit? Thank you for your honesty, in that. It's very clear that you're not trying to make Abuna look bad or anything like that. And honestly, these situations, not just your situation, being in any position of leadership or mentorship is very hard. Not even just for priests, even like servants when they're hanging out with youth start to get anxious. Like, what happens if I'm like, I have these bad habits and I end up doing it in front of them, but we're teaching them don't do that. That dynamic is there for all of us, I think. I get anxious, to be honest, even myself, of being like, yeah, obviously I say be pure. Do I have bad thoughts? Of course I do. It's like, I might be like, don't judge, but I definitely sometimes judge. And so all of us, including Abuna, all of us are very much a do as we say, not as we do, on some level, because all of us are struggling for perfection, but falling short. So number one is rooting everything in the truth. Something isn't right or wrong because if Abuna is saying it, it's either right or wrong objectively in accordance with the image and likeness of God, right? So if Abuna says don't judge, but he judges, that's fine in the sense of he's not saying don't judge because I don't judge, right? If he is, then he's already teaching wrong, right? It should be don't judge because our Lord told us not to. It shouldn't be based on me, right? It can't be like, don't cuss because look at me, I don't cuss. It should be because let your mouth be seen with salt, as scripture says. It should not be because of the person. So I think you're good to do what you're doing of treating, like being prayerful before guidance about, Lord, I want you to speak, and not worrying as much, especially with little access, about whether Abuna is in perfection. Definitely, I want to just almost completely dismiss, forgive me, the family member who's not, quote unquote, behaving properly. Like, Abuna can't control anyone. I know it looks bad on Abuna, especially as a culture. We're probably already all judging Abuna over his kid. But it's like any parent could do their best and a kid will still behave the way that the kid does, right? So we can't hold Abuna accountable for if their kid, especially if their kid is an adult, makes decisions that don't match the gospel. Everybody's treating us. I wouldn't even take into consideration personally the child. But if what Abuna is teaching me is in accordance with the gospel, and I treat confession guidance sacramentally, like you said at the very end, that's the Holy Spirit, then as long as you are not doing something wrong, and as long as that truly your desire, I do believe that God can work good from anything that is in it. Like, that's not a hypothetical as far as I'm concerned. That's the measure of your ability to trust God, right? There's a story that I heard from one of the priests in Canada. During their 40 days for Baramos, one of the elders told them that he met, and forgive this example, priests from Arieh, from the small, tiny villages and countryside for Kura. He's like, that this priest is a drunk. Like he's an addict, and he casts out demons because the gift of exorcism was necessary for that community and no one else had it, right? So even though the whole village sees Abuna as a drunk, right, is that that priest was casting out demons, because God will work through whatever is available for him to work through for the needs of his kids. Right, God cares about his kids. So anyone, he said, ask and you shall receive. So this is a way for you to build up the trust of God, right? Because it is not the man that we're looking for. And then, like, especially in your case, it doesn't sound like Abuna is teaching anything against the gospel. It sounds like your struggle is he's not doing what he teaches me, and that's okay. It's not our job to hold Abuna accountable to the gospel. God can hold Abuna accountable to the gospel. But if you're doubting the advice itself, then just ask, of just being like, is it, why, what is this about? Can I understand this more, et cetera? But if it's not because of, I just don't like how Abuna's living, but you might even have exciting experiences, to be honest, of being like, yeah, this is all I had. Abuna Finesse, just like the example we used last week, used to always tell us Eli was a rotten priest, and he's the one who discerned the voice of God for Samuel. And that's why, like, I always laugh now and add, and then Samuel told him he's going to die, him and his son, right? So, like, that sucks. So God still spoke to him and spoke to him about Abuna, Samuel's Abuna, of the time. Any follow-up on that? Okay. Cool. As a young man, you have a coworker who is flirting with you a little. What do you do about it? Don't flirt back. I'm actually, I don't even know if it's being cute or not, but I'm glad that you asked that, because that Dorotheus of Gaza is huge on little leads to big, little leads to big, little leads to big. And it's so true. I think of any major sin you do and think about where it started. It always started little. It always was just a little bit of allowing a little more freedom than you normally would allow yourself. And then it spirals out of control. So even though I know it seems like not a big deal, it is a big deal if you want to preserve your purity before and after marriage. I'm talking about both. And so what I would say is, don't engage, don't show acceptance in whatever that means. If that means don't laugh, then don't laugh. It isn't funny. Like, it's not a behavior we want to encourage, right? Like, let's look at this as a random comparison. If you're a parent and your 4-year-old cusses you out, on purpose, not because they don't know it's a cuss word or because they can't pronounce certain words properly, I would hope that we're not like, ah, oh, it's so cute, tell them again, right? Like, it'd be like, when the minute we see that there's intent, it's a firm like, no, right? We don't say that, right? Now think of the same scenario. Imagine that the kid doesn't even know it's a cuss word, but because we laugh, and I definitely laugh, I'm not gonna lie, especially when it's an accident, but when they see like, oh, they think it's funny, they repeat it, right? Because like, oh, this got a laugh, right? So it's the same thing. So if somebody's flirting, and the reason I'm bringing it up is because faithfulness in marriage is becoming harder and harder. It's not easy. It's not like people think. It's not like, oh, I got married, now there's no looking left or right. No, the warfare is there. And so let's say you and your spouse are having a rough time, one is withholding sexual relationships from the other. You have no idea when the accumulation of those little flirts is suddenly more than that in the moment. So don't overthink it, but at the same time, don't engage it. Just don't make it a thing. Don't make it acceptable. Don't make it funny. Even if that means you looking awkward, good, be awkward. Like, I mean, if that's the cost, that's a very small cost. I don't think the workplace is going to be like, ha, 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 I can't believe it, he doesn't allow flirting. That would be an awkward convo in the workplace. So I don't think that it's going to escalate. Your stances on sexuality are more likely to get you in trouble than not accepting a flirt. But yeah, be on guard. How do you know the difference between when the devil tempts you and when a desire is simply coming from you? Sometimes it feels like we say the devil made me do it too much to avoid our own personal wants and accountability. Honestly, most of the time it's us. I want to say it's almost always our own thing. It's usually your own desire that's taking hold, which we all do. There's a really funny story from the life of Saint Bishoy that I love, where this monk is insistent that he wants to be a hermit. And he goes to Saint Bishoy and he's like, Abba, give me the blessing. I want to go be a solitary. And Abba Bishoy is like, no, it's not the time, it's not the place. He said it very nicely, gently, whatever. The guy's insisting. After a lot of arguing, Abba Bishoy is just like, okay, fine, like, go do it. I don't know, whatever interval later, the guy comes back to Saint Bishoy and he goes, pray for me, Abba. He's like, the warfare is so strong. The warfare is so intense. And Saint Bishoy, being a nice guy, was like, oh, Habibi. And so he is in his cell and he prays for him. And the devil comes to Saint Bishoy and goes, I didn't even know he was there. he was like, what are you praying for? And he was like, as though I'm attacking this guy. I didn't know the dude was on his own. Just as another reference, like, it's often us. The devil will often hijack what he already knows is our weakness to add intensity to it. The devil, he does actively initiate. I'm not saying he never does. I'm just saying often it's not. But what I would say is, whether it's from you or from the devil, who cares? In the sense of, if it's wrong, it's just wrong. Whether I wanted the wrong or the devil tried to entice me with the wrong, if it's wrong, it's just wrong. Because if you learn how to combat yourself or the devil, both are great in the war, right? Like, if you're trying to be a soldier, there's an aspect of learning how my enemy works, but there's also an aspect of learning my own weaknesses. So they're both helpful to strive against, and it doesn't really matter what the source was most of the time. There might be some random cases where it might, but in general, the gospel is the easiest way to navigate stuff. Oh, this is tough. I was dating someone that hid the fact that there's a possible hereditary mental illness in their family. Should they have revealed that from the beginning? They claim that these things are shared only after you trust each other enough. Is that correct? I have no idea. Like, just being completely honest, I don't know what the right thing is here. It's such a difficult one because I'm aware that the church might have rules about it. I don't know what the rules are. I haven't had to be involved in that in terms of having to reveal stuff or not. I just think it's such a difficult thing because having the genes doesn't mean you're going to have it. And then, like, stopping a relationship just because they have it could be. But then if you didn't know and you knew that you couldn't handle it, like, that can affect the whole way you approach the relationship. Like, it could cause it to crumble even if you're, quote-unquote, stuck in it. I do think that there needs to be freedom of speech between the two before marriage. Like, I don't think that anything should be off limits in love between the two to ask one another. Different from demanding, but of asking. Because it's funny, I saw a specific case where somebody was dating somebody that was diagnosed with MS. And so the parents of the person who doesn't have MS were like, you shouldn't approach this relationship. This is a really, really bad idea. And honestly, I'm not commenting on this bad idea or not. I do think that the person is being very romantic about it, of being like, no, I want to be theirs through thick and thin. I don't have a problem with that, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, it's like, but there's something true about thinking about it. Are you going to be able to care for this person at some point in your life the way you might care for one of your children? Are you okay with that you might one day knowingly have to be celibate when you might not be ready for celibacy? Like, there's a bunch of things that could come up. And I'm not saying, like, say no, but it's like, but if you did know, it does affect things. And at one point, the person was staying with the person just to prove that the person wouldn't leave someone for disease. And I'm like, how is this loving now? Now it's one thing to say I'm leaving you because of the disease, and it's another thing to say I'm only with you for the disease. Like, where you're seeing that you're not compatible, but you only want because of the disease. I think it's such a difficult thing to navigate. I'm scared to use words like should, because I don't have enough experience in that to know how that could affect somebody. So I'm scared to. I think what I would just say, encourage you to do is be honest about your strengths and weaknesses. If it's something that you think you feel you would like to know about when you're dating someone, ask them. You're allowed to ask that. Like, I don't think you're wrong or evil to. Just be, again, like we talked about speech at the beginning, know why you're asking. And don't do sin with the answer, right? Like you can't judge somebody for it, right? And I think that the person might have a bit of a point too, because if I'm thinking from the perspective of the person who's got the genetics and I don't presently have that disease, I might also want the person to get to know me before dropping that information and being like, can you get to know me for deciding that you want to leave me just because of my genes? But if you know that you're the kind who is like a no way, no matter what, because of your genes, which I'm not saying you're wrong, then cool, go ahead and ask and get it out of the way if that is. But just be gentle, be respectful. Don't attack people with their weaknesses. That's a rough one. How should I manage a breakup? I love that I'm the monk doing the relationship stuff. How should I manage a breakup? What are ways to spiritually restore myself? I want to say it's so easy. But I think the reason people struggle with breakups is because I feel like they date wrongly. So by that, what I mean is, okay, when you date someone, obviously you're hoping that it could result in marriage, right? But the dating phase, at least in North American culture, because I know engagement and dating look different in Egypt, of what each of those events mean. But I mean, I'm going by pop culture. For us, it should be, I'm examining, are we compatible on a baseline, right? You're not going to find out perfect compatibility. So the reason I'm saying that is I feel like people when they're dating these days, first of all, there's a million new titles that I think are so dumb, of like, we're talking, we're exclusive, we're mishadafi. I'm like, I don't know what any of that like means. You're either in a relationship or you're not. But in dating, the goal is not to make it work. In marriage, you have to make it work. In dating, you do not. In dating, we're finding out, is this a good idea? And so if you've asked someone out or accepted being asked out, it means on some level you like this person, or usually, I would hope that you're not dating people that you find hideous internally and externally. So if you're dating them because you actually see a quality in them, that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. But then it becomes, am I trying to force this to work? Because the reason why some people are struggling is that they're treating their breakups like a divorce, and it's like you weren't married. Now add to it, if you're doing things in dating that you shouldn't be, then you were acting like you're married on all fronts. And yes, you feel even more like you're going through divorce because those things aren't meant to be shared with non-spouse. And so you're feeling some of the real effects of breaking a relationship where you gave something that belongs to your spouse. I'm not saying that critically or judgmentally, just factually. And so if your goal of dating is finding out, are we compatible? Yes, you'll have some emotionality about the breakup, but it won't be as bad of saying, we're approaching to find out, is this a good idea? The answer is no. Better this pain than a divorce. Like, we wanted it to work, but we don't. And if you treat dating that way, you won't hate your ex, right? Because it'll be a much more civil of being like, no, they're a good human being. I saw that in them. That's even why I dated them. We're just not good human beings for one another. This person with their whole package of vices and virtue is not a good mix with me and my whole package of vices and virtue because you both have them. That's why, like, when in dating period, I usually don't care who's right or wrong in any fight, to be quite honest. I usually don't care whatsoever. It's a matter of how compatible are you on baseline with your wrongs. So work on the wrongs, sure, but in dating, you might not ever get rid of your wrongs even after 50 years, right? So we're not looking for people's wrongs and if they can fix them, right? It's a very simple, are we compatible on a baseline level? Because even that, you don't have a firm forever answer by the end of engagement. Right, there's new things that come out, and there's stuff that happens when you live together, and there's stuff that happens in new life phases. Things are different when you have kids. Things are different, new jobs. Things are different, new houses. Things are different when someone in the family gets ill. All sorts of things happen that affect dynamic, and that will pull things out. So I think it's more about preventative for managing the breakup. So to spiritually restore yourself, I'd say is thank God that you didn't marry someone that you shouldn't marry. I was saying this hurts so much, but isn't it better that I found out that we're a no now? Right? So start off by trying to find that tiny fleck of light that might be in there of just being like, yeah, but I wanted it to work. Of course you did. If you didn't want to work, it would have been a really weird relationship. But it was just being like, okay, but it didn't, and that's a good thing. Because it means that we were going to break. Isn't it better that we broke before we were united? Kind of thing. That's the philosophical answer. I mean, the practical, I'm sure you've heard, but I care about the philosophical because for me, that's how I find my peace, is I find my peace in the ideas more than I do in the other stuff. But is There really is a value in being busy and being busy with things that you like. Ask friends to carry you and tell them, be like, I need to be carried. Like, don't be ashamed to say that. With my close crew from back home, I wasn't shy sometimes to just say, I'm going to be miserable company. I'm just in a bad mood. Can you just tolerate me? And I don't want to talk about it. And I might even say, I don't want to talk about it, but I do. And I'll end up verbal diarrheaing it anyway. Right. But I mean, that's where strong relationships can come in. Like changing your environment, going on some excursion, whether local or big or small, it doesn't matter. Look for things that you can self-express that you enjoy. So you can start finding meaning in the things that you used to enjoy without the person. Burn the pictures. You don't have to burn them, but don't put a million reminders in front of you. If you have that shared playlist, don't play it. be smart about it. Because I know that those things can, not that I've ever gone through it, but I can be pretty emo. Where'd it go? Here's a follow-up on that. How to improve our self-esteem? I think breakups affect that a lot. Again, it'll affect a lot if we're dating based on people's value. That's why I keep on emphasizing, dating is not supposed to be about somebody's value, right? It's not supposed to be about whether this person is a good human being, right? Of how good are they? If you're dating, trying to assess how good your partner is, you're screwed and your marriage is going to suck. Because even if you decide they are the best in the whole world, what happens when one day you're not in that mood and you're like, actually, no, he isn't. Right? And then you're like, oh man, I misvalued my spouse. And now I'm stuck. Right? So I'm scared to this to all the married people on the screens. but it's not about whether they are, everybody is in the image of God. Everybody is a good person. The question is, are we compatible? And so if we break up because we're not compatible, that is not about my value. That is about our compatibility, right? So it's like, and incompatibility doesn't mean that you need to be the same, right? Like, I know introverts that are married to extroverts. I know lots of people who, like, a person who's hardcore to service and another person that doesn't ever want to even be in the church building. I know people who are, like, I've been to liturgy twice in 4 decades that are so religious and raise their kids religious, but they don't enter into a building. I'm not saying that that's right. I'm just saying is that compatibility doesn't mean sameness. It's a matter of, like, when I use the analogy, I'm like, if the goal of marriage is this, okay, like of the two hands completely joining, dating, we're all the way out here, right? And we're just trying to check. And do we fit well? Are we gonna fit? Do I have grooves where they have whatever? Does one have high tolerance to pain? Is one hand so greasy that the other can just slide? Right. All of those are different ways that we can that it can work. It doesn't have to be. It's not about value. Your self-esteem will only be affected if you're dating based on somebody being good enough. So don't make the dating about that. And it should be fun. Is it dating? How do you deal with passions or sins that are so deeply ingrained in you now? This is what spiritual guidance is for, especially constant ones. I say number one, your willingness, because no one can change you, right? No one can change me. No one can change anybody, right? Is that no one's going to be able to make decisions for any of us, as much as all of us would really like that. I assume, I know I would love it if somebody could. So one is, am I willing to do the work? Because that's what's needed, is that it's work. It's decision making, it's an expression of freedom. So one is a willingness. Two is a guide, because there can be specific exercises. And because you might want to fix something but not know how to do it. And so sometimes we just need practical steps towards it. And sometimes it's actually easier than we think. But if I can realize that my decisions are what led me to be so deeply ingrained in them, then I can also recognize that my decisions will help me out. Like it's the inverse is also true. And so the beginning of this can be very, very hard, right? That's like, for example, when we're talking about the tongue, is that we talked about having an awareness, but then we talked about an action of saying, am I going to self-accuse daily? That's an action. That's a work, right? And then it becomes, all right, I'm going to text and say, I'm sorry for speaking badly, right? That's an act, right? That has an impact, and it has an impact on the mind too, right? Is that mind, body, and soul, all three are going to participate. So it depends on the passion on how to deal with it. But usually there's two ways, fight or flee. And both are necessary. We shouldn't always think ourselves strong enough to fight. Like sometimes the wise thing to do is to flee, but there are situations that call us to fight. So is learning how to do those. But I'm speaking generally because the question is general, but each passion could have its own ways of disciplining. And especially if you have a spiritual father, it can be tailored to you specifically of like, how is the vice being expressed in you, not just in general? Do you think married couples should stand together in liturgy? How should a couple balance the male's desire to serve consistently as deacon, but also to serve his wife? It's a loaded question. I think you guys need to talk to each other about. One is to understand what each other is doing. The idea of both standing together is relatively new, and I'm not saying that's wrong, but I'm like, just be careful from both sides of what you're assuming in the conversation, right? Like, it's not like that's been a thing. For centuries, everybody was just fine standing separately. I'm not saying that that was right or wrong, but I'm just saying is, let's also not make it like the biggest deal in the world either, as though like this person's anti-family. Where it's like, no, like that's not necessarily what it means. And also, how is each viewing each? Because if the guy is not being like, no, I need to look good as a deacon because all holy Coptic people stand dressed as a deacon, okay, sure, there's room for compromise. But what if that person really views it as his calling, like sincerely, without ego, even if there's some ego, like, but that there is from the heart a sense of, like, God gave me this talent and I really care to use it. Right, then there should be a consideration of that. I'm not saying that the answer will be do whatever you want. I'm just saying that that's a consideration. And likewise, if the spouse is saying, but like, you understand, like the kids are going psycho and they're running everywhere, and it's exhausting for me to take care of by myself, could you? That's a consideration too, right? So that's why I'm not giving a who's right and who's wrong, but that's why I'm like, it needs some discussion about what does it look like? What are ways that we can both, is there a way that both of our needs can be addressed? If so, great. If there isn't, then how do we go about compromising? So it's not to me a question of, do I think married couples should stand together as much as it is, what is the right thing for every individual family with where they're at, with what they're struggling with, and what the context of their whole parish is. Because if you're in a parish where nobody does and you insist, you're causing a whole different issue too. And I'm not saying that you're wrong, but it could be really awkward of being like, why are we the only ones standing together and stuff like that. But I can't tell because there's only 5 cameras how bored you guys are yet. Okay. I can't hear you, Mom.
Well, that might not get you bored, Habib. That's all.
This is my mom, everybody. Should we as Christians not try and be friends or interact with people who accept sin. I understand the whole concept of hate the sin, not the sinner, but what about people who don't view what they do as sin? It depends on what you mean interact. Like, there's no way you're not going to interact. Even at church, we're all doing really, like, individual members of the church, we're doing very wrong often. And some of us don't even care that it's wrong. So I don't know that it'll be useful exercise to evaluate whether they're good or bad. But if there's obvious wrong, I mean, every culture has some version of the saying, you are who your friends are, right? Religious and non. Everyone has that concept built in, right? It takes one bad apple, all of those different analogies that everybody uses. So it's not about not being friendly and not interacting as much as who do I keep as my main company, because they're going to impact me, right? So, like, the crew from Kitchener, I used to speak very formally at some point in my life. I remember when I started hanging out at the Moor, going on rounds during a pharmacy rotation, and I started using words like sick and awesome because of how often they were using it. And no one was using it at work at that time. There was an influence. So you're going to be influenced. So it's not about whether they're good or bad as much as if the behaviors and the conversations are not in alignment with your safety and stability. I'm not even just talking about growth, but even your stability of health, then not a good decision. And again, we're not the only ones saying that. Everyone is saying that. Think of this non-religiously for a second. If your parents want to protect you from drugs, right, or drug addiction, if you're hanging around with people who are always doing drugs, like, you're going to do it, right? It's not about whether they're good or bad. It's like, no, get out of there, because you're going to do it. And the parent is going to violently and actively remove you to the best of their ability, right? They'll change you schools. They'll do whatever. Like, I don't care if they're a good kid. I'm not judging them, but I don't want you near them. I want to protect you. So when we reach a certain age, we need to protect ourselves too. It's not, because once we can own our own decisions, there it is. Connected to this is, how do you navigate friends you hold dearly because of history, but feel like they may not spiritually be for you as you spiritually grow? It depends on what you mean by that, I think. I see that in their private life, I think they're bad, quote unquote, then that's not healthy. If it's, we're no longer able to share the good that we used to do, I don't think it would be wrong to at least give your friend the benefit of starting off by bringing up the issue, right? Of being like, hey, I noticed that we used to do this and this and this and this. Our crew back home, we did that with each other, being like, hey, something's different. We've had these random moments of self-reflection where that has happened. And it was positive. Nobody was like, no. It was just like, yeah, whether we did anything about it or not, different question. But there's if you have such a dear friend and things were really good, why not ask them? Of being like, or even start off with a positive. Hey, I really miss how awesome this aspect of our friendship was, by framing it through the positivity. Not as like, hey, I've noticed you're not the same and you're not as spiritual, and now we do these wrong things. And then suddenly it can be very uncomfortable, right? Instead of just being saying, hey, like, I miss the days where we had fun without doing this. Or being like, when did we start doing this? Remember all these good things? Or one step higher, just start doing the good things that you used to do without having a conversation, and see if the person's receptive. I'm just saying, it doesn't need to go from the noticing to abandonment in one go, especially if there's history. I think we owe each other to try, right? Of saying, is there anything that we can restore? If it's an actual real incompatibility, if you need to distance, don't distance because they're bad. Distance because you don't know how to interact with it, or because you don't have immunity, like, just to use it as an analogy. right? Like, so it can't be, oh, because they're so bad for me. But look for the spaces that you can share. Like, try and find there to be something that it can't just be like a khalas those. Like, if there's a way of having them in your life, even from a distant place, okay. The analogy I was using is like, especially because we're all sinners, not just your friend, but you and me, is like, if I have a disease that causes me to compulsively kick and you have weak bones, then maybe for safety, you might need to stand a certain distance away from me, because not because I'm so bad I kick, like it's because I kick and because you have weak bones. But I should be wanting to stand as close to you as I can without being kicked, right? I'm not saying I'm going to go to another room because of your kicking. It'll be like, no, I'll go like 1 foot farther than where you can reach for now, just because I don't do well with the kicking. Not because how dare you kick? You've got a disease, and malish, I have a disease too. And I also should be saying, is there anything I'm able to do for them to help them not kick? Is there something I can do to protect my weak bones? Like, maybe I can wear shin guards, and be like, no, when I wore the shin guards, I was fine. The kicking like was okay, right? Is that I should look for those things, right? It shouldn't just be like, it's all done. Again, especially if you were friends for so long. There's just a million on both sides. I think I'll do, because we started at 20, I'll do two more. And call it before you're all dying because of me. Sorry, I'm just trying to see these. There's a good question about doubt, but it warrants more time than I've got, and that's the reason why I didn't touch that one. I'm currently experiencing weakness in the sense that I have no zeal or courage to stand up for my faith. I no longer take life seriously as everything comes, as I joke around a lot. I feel like a fool. I let people walk all over me, but on the other hand, I become more gracious and understanding to people in general. I used to be a firm zealot, serious in my faith, but very judgmental and distant from those I felt wouldn't suit my lifestyle. Each lifestyle has its pros and cons, and I needed to see both angles to realize one isn't better than the other. I no longer know myself or where I want to go. I've prayed about it, but nothing's changed for a while now, but I haven't lost hope. I just want some guidance. What should I do from here? So one might actually have been better than the other. Like, even your assessment might be inaccurate. But I think the simplest thing is, we don't do what we do based on a choice of lifestyle, right? Like, if you're navigating which lifestyle do I choose, then you're not gonna find peace, right? That's why, like, those first few talks are about, like, what is the narrative? If there really is a God and he really created me and there really is such thing as a relationship with him, then if I have an objective design, it's my duty to conform to the design. That's all. Keep it really simple. Make every situation just say, what does the Son of God or the daughter of God, I'm not talking about Christ, I'm talking about us. What does one of the image of God, what are we supposed to do in this situation? It's not about a lifestyle, right? It's just about what conforms to rightness and wrongness, and then everything will become much more simple. And you're going to have different vices and different phases that you're going to work on in different ways. Old vices might come back or have new faces. Some vices might just disappear. All of that is normal. Like, I actually miss my Nazi phase. Like, I miss when we were so religious about fasting that it was like, if there's a single ingredient that was wrong, it was like, nope. Won't have it. And like, I was fanatical about it. I miss those days, because I'm like, I miss caring about discipline. So maybe I did some things wrong in it. No problem. That was me being whatever year old I was at the time. We're all gonna, we're all going to have wrongs in different times. And all of our wrongs, not all of them, but many of our wrongs are based on our environment. So there's nothing weird about that, right? Is that if you are in a position of power, you're likely to have temptations of pride, arrogance, control of other people, condescension. And I think that everyone in power will do those things. I think they're more likely. Like if you think of like disease, somebody, like we know what bacteria are more common where, right? So it's like if somebody's living in a particular area, we're not going to be shocked if they get certain infections. We're like, yeah, they live where that bug is prevalent, right? So it's the same thing spiritually. So instead of just trying to figure out which lifestyle, instead just say, how do I be healthy in my context at all times? What is the most healthy decision available to me right now? Even if you don't know what it is, like, and with my limited knowledge, what do I know? And let it play out, because then you don't need to think as much and get stuck in your mind with whether what you did is so good or so bad, and then doing it. Last one, I think this one can be not too long. If someone is considering the monastic life and initially believe that that was their path to repentance and salvation, they discovered it was not, and during the time of pursuing monasticism was confessed to a monk. Now they're considering marriage. Should they find another spiritual father that perhaps is married? I don't want to leave my spiritual father, confession father, but I do realize some of the limitations that may come with attempting seeing guidance regarding marriage from a monk. Not that it can't happen. There's just some of the things that they haven't and won't experience. I don't want to forfeit this life or discipleship that I discovered in this Abba. What do you suggest? There is freedom, whatever you want. I don't mean that sarcastically. If you feel that the person understands you, and if it's not, you're seeing that the relationship with this person that you like is growing, just question, what is it that I'm worried about that I feel needs me to go to someone else? If it's because there's things that you think are sensitive for a monk, like ask, like just be like, are you uncomfortable with this? Like there's nothing wrong with asking that. Hey, Champagne. If it's because you just are so uncomfortable, no problem. Like you can talk to more than one person. You can switch. Like there's not, don't be afraid of it, especially if the relationship is as good as you're saying. I highly doubt that the person is going to upset. Even as priests, we often refer people one to another. Like there's been times where like, and not even just about married, not married. I met a priest in Ottawa who just had way more success, I felt, than I did in helping people stop a particular sin. I'm like, I don't know what it is about how he says the advice, but people stop when they talk to him. So I used to just be like, I would tell people in confession, like, are you comfortable opening up to this priest about this issue? Because for some reason, he's just really good at it. And I was a little jealous. I'm like, I don't know what he's doing that I'm not, but whatever. I'm happy if the person stops, right? Because everybody wants the best for everybody. So just be open about it and don't worry about rules when things are in love, because you're not opinion shopping. If you're opinion shopping, I'd be worried. But if you're just looking for the best advice available to you, then go for it and get the discipleship that you're looking for.